Shalom Aleichem, Chaver. This is Binyamin Hammer at the National Council of Young Israel. I'd like to welcome Rebbe and all of the Rabbanim who are with us for conference call number 111. Thank you, Rebbe.
You're very welcome. Question one. What is the source having a Ner Tamid in our shuls? Are there any halachas associated with it? Does it really need to be constantly on? Does it need to be on top of the Aron, which seems to be where many of most shuls have it? Of course, there are no halachas. It's purely a minig. Obviously, it's a zecher to the Ner of the Beis HaMikdash, the Ner Maravi, which was on all the time. And that's why the minigus is to be on all the time, Ner Tamid. Not a halacha, it's a minig. Doesn't necessarily have to be on top of the Aron. The custom these days is to use electricity for safety reasons and for other practical reasons. And the post can talk about it, that electricity is also good. Need not be an actual candle. So really, it's all a matter of minig. Number two, is there any significance of having the rabbi recite the Kelmole for a yard time rather than the gabbai or the person himself? No. The person wants the rabbi to do it, and the rabbi wants willing to do it, that's fine. Usually it's said by the gabbai. That's what most people do. Some the person himself does it. Again, all minhagim. Three, why do we find that some Zeres, the Rabbanan on Shabbos, we say that they do not apply nowadays since the reason does not apply? Sweeping a covered, not third floor, according to Bir Halacha. And sometimes we say that the issue still applies. Taking medicine on Shabbos, we don't grind our medicines nowadays. So the Bir Halacha is in Siman Shin, Amid, Zion, Siv Beis, which says it was always Mutter. It was always Mutter when all the floors in the city were covered. They were not third floors. As opposed to medicines, which were not always mutter. That's why there's a distinction. It's interesting, if you look in the Ktosa Shulchan, that's by Rav Chaim Noah, Simon Kuf Lamed Dalet, Siv Kotten Zion, number two. There he suggests that maybe medicine should also be mutter nowadays. Why? Why? Because if it's what we call a low plug, like a davish of a minion, a minyach rasher latiro, low plug, no way to somehow cancel the gzera chacham. If it's a case where even at the very beginning when the Chazal prohibited it, there was a situation in which they permitted it, means it's not a low plug and not a davish of a minion, then you follow the reason. The example he gives is it's called a refuah she'ena nikeres. Refuah she'ena nikeres, he suggests, is an exception. And precisely because it's an exception, then, even when it was originally Xar, that indicates that bizman hazeh, it should be mutter if the reason no longer applies. In such a situation, we can say, what's the Torah's chesed, that in bot la ta bot la gzeira. So there is an opinion that holds that way. One of the precedents quoted the Tosas in the Sechta Beitza about clapping and dancing, lest you fix an instrument. Tosas suggests we don't fix instruments anymore, so therefore maybe the gzeira should no longer apply. I don't know, people do fix instruments these days. The most common cases of a guitar string breaks, which happens pretty frequently. So they fix it, put in a new string. That would be a prohibition. So I'm not even sure that the facts are correct. When it comes to medicines, you don't find people making their own medicines nowadays. They always buy it from a drugstore. And you don't find them grinding it for you in the drugstore either, which would be a potential problem. They're all made far, far in advance, far, far away. So that's for does make sense. And, you know, post can say that if you're a cholish or ain't sakana, you're allowed to take these medicines. Not everyone agrees. Also hard to define a cholish ain't sakana. So in being makel, which is the prevailing view, as opposed to the machmirim, and in being makel as to who can qualify as a cholish ain't sakana, for example, someone who cannot function normally, how do you define that? And there were those who say if something is taken every single day, you can take it on Shabbos also, which is a not such a great svara, unless it's going to cause danger. All these kinds of cases, we can be mitzarif the sheet that says that it doesn't apply at all nowadays in Ketzos HaShulchan. Number four. If one lives near an ocean and has a private beach, may he designate the sand so that his children can play there on Shabbos. How exactly would he designate it? Is there a problem digging in the sand or building sand castles? If the beach is not private, can he designate the sand? The Shemir Shabbos Gilchosa in Perek Tezayin Tzivdalet says that all sand on the sea is muksa. A sandbox, that's okay, a sandbox. But the presumption is even the private beach, you can be miyachet all the sand there. Shalom yisaf ha-merov, we read about now. That's kachol hayam. So it can't, it's just too much. Maybe if you have a private beach and you take four pieces of some wood or something and make your own sandbox, okay, it's a sandbox. Then I think it would be permissible. If you can get away with that on a public beach, maybe it also works. If it's not so well traveled and it'll stay there for the whole Shabbos with your four walls on the public beach, it might also work. That's true. But of course, digging and building is not allowed, as the Shemir Shabbos points out. So, should be more careful if any of the children are playing with sand. Number five, everything else being equal, what is the best time to light Chanukah candles? How careful must one be about lighting on time? So here's a big machlokes. If you look in Shulchan Aruch, Tav Resh Ayin Beis Sif Aleph, that the Mechaber goes to Rabbeinu Tamzman. Rabbeinu Tamzman, so there are really three zmanim. There's what we call Shkia, then there's what's called Shkia Shnia, and then there's Tetz Kochavim. So a whole discussion, what's the best time? Most of us don't follow Rabbeinu Tam's clock. We follow the Vilna Gaon's clock. So Rabbeinu Tam says it's much too late. The question will be, is the beginning of Banish Mashas, which is what the Vilna Gaon himself seems to be inclined to say, or I think it's the consensus view, the Tesa Kochavim of the Vilna Gaon. When is that? So, in theory, it's 13 and a half minutes after sunset in Eretz Yisrael in the springtime. The wintertime, so it's counterintuitively, is longer than the springtime. Still not that much longer. Of course, if you're in America, it's significantly longer than that. And not everyone agrees with the Vilna Gaon's exact time, even according to his general approach. So I tell people the best time to light is about 5 o'clock, which in a typical year is about a half an hour after the sun sets, give or take, depends when Chanukah comes out, close to about a half an hour. You people know the exact time, 5 o'clock. That's the best time to light candles. That's presumably Tesa Kochavim according to Shitas HaGra, certainly with respect to the Rabbanans. And again, that's a good time. Is it must you be out on time? No, you don't have to do it anymore. Why? Because there are more rights there in Siv Beis. We now light for people inside. People inside, there's not so much of a difference. In the old days of the Gemara, I should tickle a regular ben ashuk with a half an hour after sunset, however you define that. Today, if you'll walk in the street much longer, imagine, you'll say 5 o'clock or 5:30, people are no longer walking the streets. They're first coming home after that. So clearly, even if we're outside, it's later, and kavachomer if it's for inside. But you shouldn't be that careful. I always say that husband and wife, they should be together for candlelighting. If it comes home last, you have to wait for him or for her, the normal conditions. And the Chofetz Chaim himself would wait for the Rebbetzin to come home from the little store she had to give them parnasa. And they asked him, how can you be so lenient? You said in your sefer you have to do it right on time. So his response supposedly was as follows. The Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos that if you have enough money for Ner Shabbos or Ner Chanukah, so you spend it on Ner Shabbos. Why? Shalom bayis odif. So the Chofetz Chaim says, my shalom bayis, my wife wants to be here when I light candles. I'll wait to light later. In general, person's at work, comes home late from school, wherever it is, from shul. Does not, you don't have to be so careful nowadays to light on time for the two reasons I just mentioned. Number six, couples that are married in Lakewood on the second night of Hanukkah. Chosin and his family will be in the hall from the late morning hours. Where and when should the Chosin and his family light? The family plans to drive back home after the Chosin is over and will probably not get home until 2 a.m. The Chosin is planning on going to a hotel with his collar. Okay. So the family should light at 2 a.m. when they get home. That's when they're going to be home. They should light. The Chosin going to a hotel with his collar. Now, I don't know where the Chosin and the collar live. If they live not far from Lakewood, they should go to Lakewood. They go to their private home and private apartment in Lakewood. They can light when they get home in their private apartment. Again, if they're settling in Lakewood. Of course, these days, the weddings in Lakewood, they can be from Huna all over the world. Lakewood is the capital of the world in many ways. So maybe they're living much too far away to start driving home at 2 in the morning. And they're going to be in a hotel. They should try to find, if they can, what we'll call a yeshivish hotel, which will allow them, even if they ask, to light a candle for half an hour and then blow it out. If they don't find such a hotel, so just, you know, you can't say it too loud, but it's not so clear what the rules are. You know, people, unfortunately, smoke in hotel rooms. So, you know, obviously there's a fire going. So if they, either they ask for one of those rooms, even though they have to suffer from some little residual stench, or if it's not specific which room you can or can't, they allow someone to smoke. So it means they would never allow you to leave an unattended candle, but you have no intention to do that. A couple comes home from their wedding, and they can light two candles, and they should watch the candles. He'll watch them, she'll watch them for half an hour and blow them out. That's what they should do in that situation. Number seven, is there any problem with using a floating wick on Hanukkah? No. There's a discussion in the poskim. We assume it's okay. Eight, what's the accepted zmanim for Tal's children? Can they be put out on an earlier zman if you don't use such a zman normally? Question is hard to understand. If it's before the zman, it's before the zman. You shouldn't do it. What would be shazat chak in such a case? Anyway, Misha Yakir, that's his man. Misha Yakir meant chelos alavan. Misha Yakir's chavera berochot al amas Yakir renu. The one's man with no indication at all in shas when it is. In other words, although it's a shachar, it's 4 mil, and it's 3/4 of a mil. There's certain metrics, certain objective measurements in mathematical terms. Obviously, Misha Yakir is nothing, zero. So opinions range wildly. The Prima Gadim says that Misha Yakir is only 6 minutes after Alos HaShachar. They quote Rav Moshe saying that it's only a little more than half an hour before sunrise, which is closer to sunrise than to Alos HaShachar. So the appearance varying widely. In some of the new charts, they have two versions, not that distance from each other in terms of the time. They base it on degrees. That's the logical way to do it. Misha Yakir is when light appears. Obviously, light appears on a clear day. If it's a dark day, there's no light even after the sun rises. It's pretty dark. In a clear day, the sun is starting to come up, not up yet. So you go with degrees. So most posts can work with a degree that Alos HaShachar is 16 degrees. The sun is 16 degrees beneath the horizon. Therefore, what degrees must you reach to be Misha Yakir? So they have either 11 degrees or 10.2 degrees. Now, where they got it from exactly, extrapolations based on certain times in Yerushalayim, presumably. That's what they say. But it seems to me that you got to look at what the posts in Yerushalayim themselves said. In Yerushalayim, when I saw the Kaf HaChaim, says Yerushalayim, they wait 1 hour. 1 hour before sunrise, that's the Zman. Now, I looked it up. I had my Tamina look it up. How many degrees is the sun beneath the horizon? 1 hour. 1 hour before the sun rises. It's closer to 13 degrees. So just for example, the Shas HaTzchak, when was Shas HaTzchak? Last Friday. It was the very last day of daylight savings time. And it happened to be Rosh Chodesh. And it's later than the usual November because the first Sunday was this day, November 7th. It's as late as it can get. So it was a really Shas HaTzchak. So according to the calendars that I looked in, the 10.2 was 6:39. It's a hardship for many minyanim. The 11 was 6:35. The chart that I have, which is based on, I think, 12.9, that's the amount of degrees based on Kaf HaChaim, says 6:24. Big difference. Those 10 minutes make a big difference in many shuls. They daven 6:30 and things of this nature. So you can rely on that Zman, I believe. On the other hand, if you can't, so, you know, both can say you can put them on earlier, Talis and Tefillin, but don't make the bracha until Mishayakir. You look in Hichos Talis, it's in Simen Yud Ches Siv Gimel, Hichos Tefillin, Simen Lamed Siv Gimel. This is the first shiur I had when I was elected as the Rav in my shul, Young Israel of Riverdale. The first shiur I gave before I even moved in, a long time ago, it was December 1973. Those who know American history know that was when there was a Gzeiras HaMalchus to have daylight savings time all year long. So the sun rose at 8:20. A shul davened at 6:45. What? What are you going to do? What we did was we davened at that time at Alos HaShachar, the Machmer version, like 72 minutes before. You know, that's the Machmer version. At that stage in my life, I wasn't ready to make any coolest. But I told the people, don't say the Baruch on Talis and Tefillin until you're about to say the last Ashrei after you finish the Chazaras HaShatz, or Kriyas HaTorah, as the case may be. This way, once you're not making it on time, and even to say it, as some posts can say, to make the Baruch after Yishtabach, it might also not have been on time. Even too early. So I said to make it at the end, you mashmesh, move the tefillin, move the tzitzit a little bit. That should be good enough to do in those circumstances. Question number 10. Rosh Chodesh Kislev, I was in a shul where the Shmuel was done as a Hecha Kedusha. He had to be out before all the inside parking kicked in at 7:30 a.m. Whoa, that's pretty early all the parking. How should such a situation be handled? Be better to skip Baruch Hinafshi. If that would not be enough, what else can be skipped? Well, just stop after Kaddish Deskabel. Someone after that should just leave. They call on the wrong side of the street. And after Kaddish Deskabel, Davin is basically over. It's true, there's a thing called Kaddish Yosem, we'll talk about it later on. As long as there are 10 people left, that should be good enough. Hopefully it'll be 10 people, not everybody parked on the wrong side of the street, I hope. Those 10 people should stay for the Kaddishim. Everyone else could move their car on the spot, and they can finish the rest, Aleinu Shoshio Brachinavshi, in their car, or something of that nature. It's not good to skip more than that. If you absolutely have to, maybe you should stop it 5 minutes earlier, assuming that that's still okay within the parameters of the last question. Number 11. An RV, recreational vehicle. This is the one picture below. They have a picture of it. Require mezuzah if someone is living in this full time. In this case, the person is parking in the same place every night to sleep, was using it to drive around during the day. They have no other home. The answer is yes, that's their home. Believe me, there are people who lived in much smaller homes in the old years. Now, it is true it's on wheels, but it's only on wheels when it's moving. When you park it, it's the same as a house that's not on wheels. It has all the comforts of a house, it has plumbing, it has heating, it has everything. So I think it's a regular house, and it should require a mezuzah. If yes, does a mezuzah only need to go on the door in the back that goes directly into the cabin? Or should one go on the driver and passenger doors as well when one can get from the driving area directly to the living area? Seems to me this is a Suez HaPesach, two side posts and a lintel on top in the place where you go from the driver's seat to the living area, then that would require a mezuzah. Going from the street into the car, I don't think it requires a mezuzah. I don't even think you ever have two mezuzahs and a mashkof there. I don't think you really have that. If you did, I don't think that's... The driving is not a living area. There is a chum of Beis Shar in some circumstance. I don't think it would apply in this case. It's Sirif HaKulis. I don't think it would be required. It'd be hard to put it. Where you're going to put it, I think you should leave that out. Just have it on the back. And if there's a Tzuras HaPesach going from front to back, there as well. 12. Does one need to wash every time before he eats a salad that was dip-dunked in a liquid? Specifically, if the individual doesn't have a fork available, he'll be using his or her fingers. Must he wash before dunking a donut in a coffee or eating a wonton, which is in chicken soup? The look in Shulchan Aruch, in Siman Kuf Nun Ches Siv Dalet, says exactly that. That's what it says. Even though you dunk the donut, your hand is not going to get wet. Paul can still say that since on occasion your hand will get wet, you should do Netilas Adayim, even if your hand happens to be dry in this particular circumstance. And that's where you have to do it. However, the Mishnah Berurah writes the answer of Katan Chaf. Tosfos holds that the whole din of the Netilas Adayim for Davar Shetivul B'Mashka was only in the olden days when they kept Tumah V'Tahara. We no longer do that these days. And the Magen Avraham calls it, that's a Minhag Yisrael. So therefore, one can certainly rely upon the small lenient position, which I think is the Minhag Yisrael. The Taz asked the question, Pesach night, Taz Nechus Pesach. That we wash on Pesach night in Karpas, but we don't do it all year long. So the Netziv answers, yeah, because Seder night is Eichel LeMikdash. That's why. We wear a kittel, like the Kohen Gadol, it's all Arichas. But otherwise, the Minhag Yisrael is to be Mekel. Someone wants to be Machmeh, should be Machmeh. Number 13. Can of corn, a can of baked beans on Shabbos, etc. May the juice be poured out miyad lesuda, or being that one can get to the ochel by taking out the corn with a fork without removing the psoles, it would be usur. It's a good question. Point of most poskim, pouring out the juice from the can of corn is, unfortunately, psoles mitoch ochel. A little complicated. This is Shulchan Aruch HaRav talks about these things. The Aruch HaShabbos is a nice piece. But they assume it's psoles v'toch ochel. And Rav Moshe also assumes it's psoles v'toch ochel. So it's a problem, even miyad l'suda. However, Rav Moshe says it's a heter. It's a heter. What is the heter? The heter is found in Shuvas Igros Moshe, which originally it was letters he wrote to Rav Shimon Eider. It's printed in Igros Moshe, Chelek Dalet, Simon Ayin Dalet, Boris of Katan Aleph. And the Aruch HaShabbos, who asks it in Perek Gimel, Sivkov Zayin, Sohav Doch Ochel, doesn't quote Rav Moshe, I don't believe. But the Shmir Shabbos quotes Rav Moshe. One of them quotes Rav Moshe. What's Rav Moshe's logic? He says, if you leave, I'll read you his words, Imei Niach Ma'at Me'al Morak Ein Zaborer, Me'achar da'adayin ochel u'mashke mu'rovin, ach meisiris ribu yamorek ein zavorer. But Moshe says there's a ton of liquid in the can. That's how they pack it, vacuum pack it. Much more liquid than you really want. You know, you can leave a little liquid in. That's one won't kill you. So you'll remove most of the liquid, leave a little bit of the liquid. But Moshe says it's good enough. Presumably you have to be something which is nikar, to be something which is noticeable, not just one drop, which was too small. And that leads us to the next question. Can one pour out all the oil or water from a can of tuna? This constitute borer if there's some oil mixed with the tuna itself. Once again, if what's left behind is noticeable, then I believe, according to Moshe's Svara, it would be okay. The fact that there's some small particles of a liquid that no one even notices, that would not be okay. Question number 15. Is it permissible to read the commentary on Chumash by Dennis Prager? Then I have time to look at his commentaries in the brief while I had to look at these questions. I called up somebody, and I hate, in general, talking about ad hominem about a person, and I was told that Dennis Prager has written some very wonderful things, and he's in many ways a fighter for the, how should we say, more traditional values that we espouse in the face of the woke culture that denigrates him. Therefore, we should admire him for that. I was told that he's a public Mechalel Shabbos. He writes about it. He has his own understanding of what Hashem wants from us. And therefore, if that's the case, that's what I was told. I don't know if you can read his commentary. If you want to read it, could have some very good things there. I recommend you find out from somebody who did read it and ask him if he thinks it's appropriate reading material and that it's permissible. I wouldn't rule it out completely, but I can't be matter it based on the facts that I have. Number 16. Can a couple select the gender when doing IVF? Does it make a difference if they are doing it to fulfill the mitzvah approval? In my opinion, the answer is always yes. If you want to do it, whether it's advisable or not advisable, I can't tell you. You're doing IVF anyway, so I think it's permissible to do the PGD, the gender selection. If you do it for approval, it's probably even better. You have many girls who want a boy or vice versa. That would be an additional reason to do it. Some years back, there was a tremendous tumult in Eretz Yisrael. There was a similar case. There was a Cohen who was in such a circumstance. He only wanted to have a girl. If he'd have a boy, wouldn't be a Cohen, whatever the whole situation was over there. Are you from a donor? Whatever it was. There was a whole ethical fight among the doctors in Israel. Is that sufficient reason to want to have selection? I don't know. It seems to me that selection, again, doing it anyway. You're not doing this procedure just in order to select. I know one case where someone did it dafka. There was a situation. Let's give an example. Someone has many girls, and the wife wants a boy. Says the husband, listen, I'm not interested in having any more children unless you can guarantee me it's going to be a boy. There's going to be no children. So I think it would be mutter in that case to do gender selection to have a boy. It's better than having no children. So, but other than that, if you're having children naturally in any event, I don't think it's a good idea to do any of these procedures. But you're doing it anyway for IVF, for fertility purposes. I see nothing wrong with selection. Maybe if approval is even something which one could say is preferred. Question number 17. They want to do bedikas without taking out the nuva ring. If not, in the case where it was done and the woman went to the mikveh without taking it out, it's val bedikas. There are two problems over here. The problem of bedikas and the problem of chatzitza. They're both problems. And therefore, ideally, the nuva ring should be removed. They'll ask the question, you remove it, it's going to ruin the contraception shabbat. The answer is, I was told, if you take it out for an hour, it's not going to cause an interruption in the contraception. I will tell people, if you make them, take it out a total of twice. First, take it out for the Hefsek Tara, just before the sunset. Leave it out for an hour, and then do a bedika just before you put it back in, which is well after Tetzik Ochavim, and can count in a pinch for bedika Yom Rishon. Again, the next morning, which is better to be done by day, should do a regular bedikah, but that could be with the nuva ring in. But the most poskim, it may be good. We'll see later. And then take it out a week later, exactly. Take it out just before shkia. Do a bedikah shem shvi before sunset. Go to the mikvah. And you come back. Put it right back in. even in the mikveh, you can put it right back in after the tefillah. So it's less than an hour both times that it's out. I was told that it would not in any way eliminate the contraceptive power of the nuva ring. Okay. B'di'evet, I've had such cases. B'di'evet, they didn't take it out. It seems to me, in a pinch, there's room to be makil that the bedika is a good bedika. Maybe some of the blood was trapped behind the ring. It's certainly a possibility. But if you're doing quite a few bedikas and you don't catch any red in any of the bedikas, the presumption is there's nothing there. Again, b'di'evet. As far as chatzitza, also b'di'evet. Maybe it would be viewed as a chatzitza. But number one, they say the water can get underneath it. And number two, it may possibly be considered to be balua. If it's what's called beis hastorim, then you need royal to be asmaim. It would be a potential problem if it locks up tight against the walls of the woman. That would be a potential problem. But number one, it may be balua. If it's so far in, it doesn't matter. Number two, I don't think it's that tight in most cases. And therefore, I think there's room to be mekel. It's truly for the same reason, but mekel by the bedika, because it's not so tight and blood would slide underneath. For the very same reason, water can slide underneath, and therefore there's room to be mekel. Question number 18. Do the halachas of shiluach kos yayin lishtanida apply to grape juice as well? Okay, it's found in Siman Kuf Tzadi Hey. I did see explicitly, it's found in the Sefer Pisrei Das, the Hagon of David Morgenstern, who was Rabbi Yoshev's right hand, and in Perek Ches, Sifyut Gimel of Pisrei Das, he says explicitly that grape juice is like wine for this purpose. Number 19. If one sees a bad grape on a cluster, can we say it's not a tyrovis, being that each grape is easily discernible? B. But what about different utensils in a drawer, each min is in its own holder? Well, if it's in its own holder, I don't see the problem at all. You take out all the spoons. I believe that a bad grape is not considered tyrovis with the good ones. It's clearly discernible. It's likely true in the case of different utensils. Again, the question is not clear what he's asking over here, where each min is in its own holder. So if it's in its own holder, so what's the issue? Maybe the issue is about putting them in the holder when you're washing them. All these things are possibilities. In my opinion, they're so big, these utensils, that it was not considered a tarumus. Question number 20. May one melt cheese on Shabbos by placing it in a hot pasta that's in one's plate? How about if the pasta is still in the pot, the heating element? Does it depend on the consistency of the particular cheese? Now, you probably are aware that this whole discussion of the machlokas between the Mechaba and the Ramah and Siman Shin Yud Ches Sifta Zayin, the Mechaba says everything is mutter, the Ramah says Nagu Lahakmir, V'mokum Tzorach Mutter. So, this may be considered to be a Mokum Tzorach for the people who are melting cheese on Shabbos. It's not such a tremendous need, you can live without it. But I think that it's not necessarily considered molded for the following reason. The case in the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah was something was congealed. At the end of the day, it melts and it runs like water. That's a push-up shot. A change from a solid to a liquid. Here, again, I'm not an expert in melting cheese on pasta. Someone asked me a similar question about buttering hot challah or toast, similar kind of a question. I said, you butter it, it's still there. It's not, doesn't become a total liquid. I think if you put cheese on a hot pasta, I don't believe it can become totally liquid. As long as it's sort of a semi-solid or, you know, so some body to it, I believe it can be make not necessarily a change of state. The whole issue is not understandable so much. The Mechab is matter the whole thing. The Ramah is matter v'shas hatzchak, and he's matter l'tzara gadol. So if it doesn't turn into a total liquid, it falls like water, it's room to be mekel in these kinds of showers. This is my answer. Question 21. We sometimes only get 10 or 11 people in chakras. One or two of those people tend to dive in an adjacent room so that they can take off their masks without other people feeling uncomfortable. I always position myself so I'm able to see these people whenever Devarim Shebe Kedusha are being said and during the Tefillah B'Lachash. Do I actually have to look at them for them to be counted in a minyan? It's a very, very good question. It's reminiscent of COVID-19. COVID-19 just came up all the time. People in different rooms, and could they see each other? So in Hilchas Birchas HaMazon, Simakub Tzadi Hei, Sif Alef Debir HaLocha, says, this is a big machlokas. What does that mean? He says, if you have a minyan or a mezumin in one room, and someone else is in another room, they can bench together. If it's only two people here and one there, or six here and four there, it's very questionable whether they can comprise a minyan, even if they can see each other. So too in Simon Nun Hei Sif Katan Yud Ches, the Bialach Sif Yud Gimel, says it's a machlokes, it's makel only in Shas Atcha Godol. Not so simple. There's a shot of Rochel of Atala over here. So I told people in COVID, and I'm answering now in a similar vein, is whenever there's no chashash brachal of Atala, the worst case scenario is you said something which requires a minion. Without a valid minion, it can be a makel. If it's a brachal of Atala, shayla, it's much more chomer. We should not. Where do you have a brachal of Atala? There's no minion in your daily davening. You have it twice. Chazara sashats, number one. And kriyas haTorah, number two. I would not rely on this kind of a combination, even if you are looking at them. If they're two different rooms, which are considered, you know, literally two rooms, it's not so simple. They should ask them to move in for the Chazara Sashat and the Kriyas HaTorah into that part of the room. That would be the best way to handle this. Otherwise, it's a very serious question. So, yeah. There are mekilim, I know that, but that's what I would suggest. Again, I know that there are mekilim. Question 22. An elderly person is being taken to the Gospel on Shabbos, although there is a Gentile aid, the frum relative who was the proxy wants to come along. She feels that being her uncle's 97 years old and is a cholim asukin, it would be helpful if she goes along. Is a rebishurim of the use of the gasoline if she goes to the ambulance at Tola? See that more weight in the vehicle, the more gasoline is consumed. Maybe, but she should go anyway. It's pikuach nefesh. It could be that there is no issur. There's a Shmir Shabbos Kachos, has a long footnote about this. He discusses the possibility that Rebus Shurim is only if there are more lights being lit, but not that one light gets a little bit bigger. That's a lum de shavar to Rebus Shurim. But anyway, it's mutzah because it's a chash pikuach nefesh. That this proxy should come along, take care of her uncle. 23. Lady of the ninth month is packing a bag for the hospital in case she gives birth on Shabbos. She'll have to pack a wallet and a cell phone, which she will only need after Shabbos. She's allowed to pack a cell phone because she may need it on Shabbos. Call the doctor from the car, who knows what. Even with respect to a wallet, you may not need the whole wallet. You may need some kind of ID. So whatever you may need on Shabbos, you should take. It's certainly not going to need to leave the Shabbos. It's better if you leave it behind. 24. It's a halacha if someone doesn't make or hear Friday night Kiddush, he, she makes Kiddush Shabbos morning with full Friday night text. The answer is yes, except for Vayechulu. This is in Siman Reish, Ayin Aleph, Sivches. If so, in a Kiruv type environment, with strong certainty that some people do not make Friday night Kiddush, would it be correct for the rabbi to publicly make the Friday night Kiddush text before Shabbos morning public Kiddush? I think the answer is yes. You should do it if you're sure that there's one person at least who didn't make Kiddush Friday night. And I think it's appropriate to ask the question. Anybody here who didn't make Kiddush last night? People raise their hand. So you say publicly, the reason we're saying the long Kiddush is to make up for those who didn't hear it on Friday night. But normally, you only make Baruch Prayer Goffin. If you don't do that, people make a mistake and think you always make a long Kiddush on Shabbos morning. That wouldn't be good. 25, during the 12th month of Avelis for a parent, is Kaddish Rabbanan said? Should it be said? Could it be said? The answer is no, no, and no. Our minhag is we only keep 11 months of Kaddish for a parent, not to be considered it to be a Rasha. And for this reason, you should not say the Kaddish to Rabbanan. Someone else says it. Usually these days, there's more than one person who would normally say it. And you, the other in 12 months, should not say it. Discussing something like a seum, then it's not part of tefillah, then you certainly can say it. But if it's part of the tefillah, as Rabbanu said after Rabbi Shmuel Omer, or Nusuch Sfarad after Peter Maktoris, those things should not be said by an aval in the 12th month. 26. There's no aval in shul what kaddish should be said and when. Now the Ramah does say in Yerodeya, Simen Shin I involve Siv Dalet, that you say a kaddish for Kol Mesa Yisroel, presumably after Olenu. The Ramah also says every place should follow its own custom. Now, Mishnah Brewer says in Simen Nun Hei Sivkot Aleph that Tov L'mayit B'Kadeshim. So, for example, in my shul, if there's no oven, we don't say any Kaddish. People say it's against the Ramah. Yeah, the Ramah had everything in his place. We have different Minhagim. We grew up, it wasn't that way. We didn't always say Kaddish. There was no avail. You want to do it? I don't stop someone from doing it, but it's not mandatory. Session 27. Solution falls on Shabbos and family plans to see him. Should it be Thursday night or mostly Shabbos? Either or a preference. The preference is whatever is more convenient for the family. We try to accommodate people. Doesn't matter if it's Thursday night or if it's on mostly Shabbos. Doesn't matter. 28. Shloshim falls on Shabbos and they go to the Beis Olam. Is there a choice, Friday or Sunday? Again, no difference. Some say you shouldn't go Friday afternoon. That would be better to do on Sunday if it's only afternoon, but it's Friday morning. No difference, whatever works out. And 29, if that Shabbos is Chanukah, as this year with Thursday Chanukah and Sunday Rosh Chodesh, when should they go? Should they wait until after Chanukah? The answer is yes. They should wait until after Chanukah, if it's at all possible, to go to the Beis Olam. We hope that everyone will have a wonderful few weeks. I'm not sure if we're on again before Chanukah. If not, we wish you a frelich of Chanukah, but I'm able to do it before if the people want.
Rabbi, we thank you very much. Bezrat Hashem will call upon Rabbi very soon. Thank you again, everyone. Have a good night.